fixed mindset and a growth mindset, they're both perspectives about the nature of human beings. Whether we see ourselves as fixed the way we are and static and can't and unable to change, or able to change ourselves.
Hello, everybody. It's Jake Senzina, host of the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbo. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano, I'm going to tell everybody right now.
Uh-oh.
Get ready.
Uh-oh.
Buckle up. It's all about the growth mindset. And I'm being completely honest. This podcast, the next 45 minutes, will change your life. If you really listen to our guest speaker today and you really take notes and go back and listen to it again, you're not in the fixed mindset. You are now in the growth mindset. You are in the next dimension, because it's all about working on yourself. And it's all about working hard. That's what Jake and Gino do. We work hard. We're not smart. Right, Jake?
We just aren't. Hey, man, I just put my seatbelt on for the folks on YouTube. You know, I just listen to Gino here. So
I'm being honest. I'm super excited for this one, because I've been talking about this book for years. And as a parent, all the parents out there, this is going to help your relationship with your children. It's not about participation trophies. It's about really developing your children, developing the fact that, hey, we're all great, but at the end of the day, it really is about working harder. So go ahead, Mr. Stenziano. You got the
mic. All right. Here we go. Today's guest is Eduardo Briceño, co-founder of Mindset Works, the pioneer in growth mindset development services. His two TEDx talks have each been viewed by millions, and he is an inductee into the Happiness Hall of Fame. We got to talk about that one a little more. I mean, we're all about positive mental attitude over here. So without further ado, Eduardo, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jake. And thanks, Gina. It's great to be here with you.
Hey, we are so pumped about this. Now, you just don't wake up and say, I'm going to, you know, get inducted to the Happiness Hall of Fame. And, you know, look, people don't go to school to learn about growth mindset. So we want to hear about the journey and how you ended up here. So tell us about your journey to this point.
Sure. So my journey, I'm from Venezuela. I grew up there until in high school. My family moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I finished high school there. And I ended up going to college here in the United States, which was not expected for me. And I studied engineering and finance, which I pursued not because I was passionate about it, but because I thought it would give me some strong skills so that I could get a job in a recession, in a weak economy. I could get a job. Then after that, I went to Wall Street. I worked in investment banking in New York for 2 years, and I was very engaged in that because I was working in lots of different industries with lots of different product groups, like mergers and acquisitions, leverage finance, equity financing. So I was learning a ton. Then I joined the investment bank's venture capital group in New York, and then moved to Silicon Valley because that was the dot-com boom. And I was working in, you know, Sand Hill Road, which is the road with all the venture capital firms are based in Silicon Valley. And I had a really good time for a few years. And then I realized that my learning curve was flattening and I wasn't being engaged by the learning as much. And I got the feeling that I wasn't making a difference in anybody else's life. Like my existence was not actually making a difference in absolutely anything, because I realized that there was so much capital in the industry that the great companies were going to get funded one way or the other, whether I was there or not. And I was on the boards of directors of these companies, supposedly advising these CEOs who were much more experienced than I was. And I felt inauthentic, you know, just repeating what I heard around the board table from other investors and not really understanding why that was sound advice. So I thought, you know, I better do something with my life that makes me feel like I'm doing something here on earth, mm-hmm. rather than just, you know, consuming food and doing nothing else. So that involved, I mean, that was a quarter life crisis. I got physically sick. You know, I was depressed. I was not in a good place. It felt like a tempest. I was I had a repetitive strain injury. So I was afraid that I might become disabled and not be able to use my hands. And without my hands, I didn't know what to do. So I thought, well, you know, I was living the deferred life plan, saying I'll work really hard, and then later I'll I'll just enjoy the fruits of that hard work. And I realized, no, I have to live and do something worthwhile right now. So I went to grad school to find what that was, what was going to be for me. So I was interested in social entrepreneurship, and I explored a few different social entrepreneurship ideas. And in grad school, I was introduced to Stanford professor Carol Dweck, who wrote the book Mindset that you just referred to. And she was looking for somebody with a business background to start a company to put her research out into the world and be able to impact lives. It was the year after she published the book that Gino just mentioned, Mindset, by Carol Dweck. And so we met. You know, I learned about her work. When I read her book, it explained a lot of my past and how my limiting beliefs had limited me in different ways. And I thought, wow, like, this is really helpful to me. It could be really helpful to a lot of other people. So I got really excited, partnered up with her. That was 13 years ago. And that was the start for me on learning about growth mindset and how we could impact lives through that work.
So Eduardo, you would say on the six basic human needs, you were meeting the first four before you found that all of a sudden you're lacking growth and you're lacking contribution. You were basically, those are the four fundamental needs. You were hanging out, you have significance, you're a little unique, you have certainty and uncertainty, but where life really gets challenging and a lot of fun, where people are in the fixed mindset, they don't hit the growth and the contribution. That's why they have no joy, as we say, is happiness. Would you concur with that?
Absolutely. You know, I was motivated by kind of safety and security and being able to meet the basic needs of food and shelter. And once I was getting, you know, well paid in venture capital and I wasn't worried about not paying the bills, then there was not much left there in terms of, you know, how is this work that I'm doing engaging me for something that is meaningful to me? Mm-hmm. So absolutely, as I moved up the needs, then I felt empty. Yeah.
So this is a real estate show, so we have to say the basic human needs are food, clothing, and apartments. Once you beat those, after that,
I knew that was coming.
I had to say that. You gotta plug the real estate, right? But after you have that, you know, thousands of years ago, that's what we're looking for. But now we all know that we're created for something greater. And for me, in my 30s, having the fixed mindset, being stuck at the restaurant, it's not that the restaurant was bad. It's that I knew I was made for more. I wasn't made for just cleaning shrimp. I just knew that in my being. And that was soul sucking to me to get number five and number six. And I was entrenched in the fixed mindset because I was comfortable doing things in week after week. Eduardo, just go out and tell everybody right now, define what the fixed mindset is, give an example of it, and then let's dive into the growth mindset as well.
Sure, absolutely. So a fixed mindset and a growth mindset, they're both perspectives about the nature of human beings, whether we see ourselves as fixed the way we are and static and unable to change, or able to change ourselves. And so, for example, if we think that some people are math people and other people are not, that's a fixed mindset about math or numbers or analytics. If we think that some people are personable and others are not, then that's a fixed mindset about being personable, versus whether you're very personable or not, you can get better. You can continue to connect with people and enjoy conversation and get energy from that. And so another example that we're just talking about is happiness. When I was going through my quarter life crisis, I read the book, The Art of Happiness by the Dalai Lama. And it opened my eyes. Before that, my approach to happiness and to my emotions was to change my circumstances. I thought, if I just could get, you know, a promotion or a salary raise or the bigger house or car or whatever, then I would be happy, right? And what that book opened my eyes to was that I can actually change my happiness independent of my circumstances. I can cultivate those emotions from within myself. So that changed me from a fixed mindset about happiness, that I can't affect my happiness. My happiness is just a result of what's around me, versus a growth mindset of happiness, which is something that I can work to change in myself.
There are so many examples in the book. I'm going to hold it up for everybody. Mindset of a person with a fixed mindset. The one that comes to mind for me is John McEnroe. Even though he has an amazing skill level, I think he led a life that he left a lot on the table. Fixed mindset. It's somebody else's fault. The weather, the sawdust, the noise, I feel sick today, blah, blah. They are excuses. I want everyone to stop for a second and think if you have a little bit of John McEnroe on you. I know I did at the restaurant. It was either the economy or it was the employee's fault. It was my brother. It was never me. I'm always out there making excuses. And once I figured that out and I'm like, I need to grow myself. We attract not what we want, but what we are. And that's when, once I realized that I needed to grow myself, that character ethic that Stephen Covey talks about versus the personality ethic, everything changed for me. Cause then I took responsibility. I was able to respond better. And I think that's what embodies the growth mindset. Would you go deeper into the growth mindset, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So when, and I agree completely with what you just said, and to expand on it, what a lot of research shows is that when we are in a fixed mindset, when we think that we can't change, one of the things that happens is we're thinking, okay, if people are either smart and talented or not, I want to be in the smart and talented category. So the way we go about doing that is by staying within our comfort zone, doing the things that we already know how to do well, perfectly, without mistakes and quickly. So we don't challenge ourselves. We're always trying to do things flawlessly so that other people think that we are talented and smart. Versus in a growth mindset, if we are not being challenged, we can become unmotivated because we can become bored. So we can be in a growth mindset and kind of like unmotivated and disengaged because we're not being challenged. We want to take on challenges we can learn from. In a fixed mindset, we see effort as something that's negative. Only people with low ability need to work hard. People with high ability don't need to work hard. Versus in a growth mindset, like you said, the both of you, you know, you work really hard in your family of companies. You're really good at what you do, but you work really hard to continue to get better. That's like an Olympic gold medalist. They're the best in the world, but they don't rest on their laurels. They wake up the next day to continue to get even better. That's a growth mindset. Or if we're just novices and we're not really good at something, we know we can develop our abilities and become better. So we take on challenges in a growth mindset because we want to try new things that we can learn from. In a fixed mindset, we shy away from challenges. And when we experience setbacks or mistakes or failure, in a fixed mindset, we take that as evidence that our ability is low. So we tend to give up and disengage. We say, I'm not good at this. I'm going to go do something else. Versus in a growth mindset, if we're doing things we haven't mastered yet, we persevere. We try different strategies. We ask for help. And to your point about John McEnroe, when we receive feedback or when we receive criticism, in a fixed mindset, we tend to say, to protect our ego, we tend to say, this is not true, right? You know, this person doesn't know what they're talking about, or they're just trying to hurt me. Versus in a growth mindset, we listen and we say, hey, what is there some truth here that I can learn from? And all of those things mean that when we think that we can change and get better, then we take on more learning-oriented behaviors. And as a result of that, we actually do get better and reach higher performance.
There is so much to everybody. You need to rewind that, because for me, as an adult, as a parent, I struggled with this, because one of my children, let's say they're playing a sport and they come in third place, the natural tendency is to say, hey, Michael, you did a great job. You know, you did awesome. You know, you should have won first place. But that's not the right thing to say to the child, because you should say, hey, Michael, you did great. You won third place. But if you want to win first place, don't take away where that person's hard work and perseverance to win first place. If you want to win first place, you're smart, you're talented, don't label your children, but tell them it really comes down to hard work. Do you want it as much as the first place?
Or ask them, how are you going to get there, Michael?
That's right.
So you got to get the brain thinking that there's something to be done to get to that point. There was another great example of the book. I give a shout out to Knoxville here, because they're talking about Coach Summit with the Lady Vols. And basically they had a team split with a lot of freshmen and a lot of seniors. And the team had a history of winning and they won so many championships. So the freshmen on the team just expected it to happen. And they got midway through the season and they started this huge slump. And Coach Summit said, look, we got to show up every day and we got to put the work in. And they gave an example in the book where they laid it all out on the line and they still lost the game. And she kept pushing them, show up every day, keep working harder, and you will get there. Mm-hmm. And they ended up turning it around towards the end of the season. They actually won the national championship. But throughout the season, they were losing to teams left and right, and they didn't think they were even going to make the tournament. So it was that commitment to showing up and working hard, not just taking it for granted that, you know, because we have some seniors on this team, they've won before, that we're going to do it again. No, you have to put the work in to get there, and you can't coast. So I thought that was a great example, and had to give a shout out to Knoxville there. So
Eduardo, can you give some examples in the book of how destructive destructive fixed mindset can be for companies, whether it's Enron, whether it's the amazing Lee Iacocca, who is great, and then all of a sudden fixed mindset, he can't be wrong, he has to be the smartest person in the room. Can you dive into that? Because this is very important for all the entrepreneurs out there to listen. You have to exhibit the growth mindset. You have to be able to take the criticism and the growth, commit, and then figure it out. So can you give us a couple of examples, please?
Absolutely. So first, to kind of build on to that and build on a couple of things that you both said, is one thing that's counterintuitive about this work and that we often do and it has unproductive consequences, is that when we praise people for being smart, whether it's our kids, right, they do something well and we say, wow, you're so smart, for example, we do it with our best intentions to raise their self-esteem and their confidence. And that might actually happen in the short term. They might be feeling, yeah, I'm so smart, right? But what's going on? They're saying the reason people succeed and do things well is because they're smart. And I am smart, that, you know, they're feeling good about themselves. But the problem is when they get into something hard or they struggle and they don't do something well, then they say, I must not be so smart. And so this is not good for me. I don't want to do this anymore because people are going to think that they're going to see that I don't do it flawlessly. They're going to think that I'm incapable. So I'm not going to do this. I'm going to go do something else. So that confidence is very brittle, right? We say that people are smart to make them feel better about themselves, but as soon as they struggle, then they collapse. And so in companies, that can also happen, where we call it, like, they can either have cultures of genius or cultures of know-it-alls versus cultures of development or growth. And so when you are in a company and, for example, the most senior person in the room, there's the idea that they have to be the smartest and they have to have all the answers and they have to know it all and they can't talk about what they're trying to continue to improve, they're not asking for feedback, then that's a culture of genius or a culture of know-it-alls. And what happens then is people are not listening to other perspectives, they're not engaging in debate, right, to think about different ideas and learn from each other. They're not giving and receiving feedback. It's not safe to talk about kind of what you're trying to improve or the mistakes you've made and what you can learn from those mistakes. And that leads to stagnation. It leads to people trying to prove themselves all the time and do things as best as they can and not iterating and trying to continue to get better. And so when companies have that culture of genius or culture of know-it-all, then it leads to stagnant performance rather than innovation and continued improvement.
So the next question for me, I'm going to answer it, and then I want you to really piggyback off, because for me, how did I get out of the fixed mindset is very important. It was a revelation for me. I guess I had my midlife crisis. I just got angry with my situation and I saw what I was doing was not working. I went to life coaching school. That really helped me out a lot. I learned a new skill, something that I had never done before. I had an accountability partner in Jake who was pushing me. The other thing that I focused on is I wasn't just focusing on myself. I started focusing on the willingness and the ability to learn. And all of a sudden, that's what propelled me from the fixed mindset to the growth mindset. And also starting a podcast, not doing something 5 or 6 years ago and sounding foolish, but not worrying about it. Saying to myself, everyone needs to start somewhere. We all start at ground zero, and the willingness to continue to work and to get better is how I got out of that fixed mindset. You know, do you have any other tips for people to start right now that are so entrenched but want to take it to the next level? I had anger and I had the desire and I had the ability to listen to Tony Robbins and say, if Tony can do it, then I can do it.
Yeah, great. So the shortcut for me, the simplest thing is always to get into the learning mode, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when people are going through challenges and crisis, like, for example, the COVID-19 crisis. I've heard from lots of professionals where the way they did business didn't work anymore, and they were going through a lot of trouble. And those who said, I'm going to get into learning mode and try to figure out how can I do things differently, mm-hmm. and what people are good at doing things this way, let me talk to those people. They end up being a lot more resilient and finding ways to then thrive. And very often then they find things that will be helpful to them even after the pandemic, mm-hmm. right? So, wow, like, I thought this was going to be really bad for me. Now I'm going to come out of it stronger. But that's the short answer. The longer answer is that it's really, really fruitful to start by examining our fixed mindsets and to try to become more self-aware mm-hmm. on what abilities we tend to see as fixed, either in ourselves or in other people. Because the truth is, it's not like people are either growth mindset people or fixed mindset people. We all experience fixed mindsets on some things some of the time. Mm-hmm. And so becoming more aware on those things help us reflect on how is that belief working for me, right? Yes. And is this working for me well, or is it preventing me from better achieving my goals? And we can do some reflection on that. And it doesn't mean that fixed mindset is always bad. Like, for example, you know, I think that I would love to read two books at the same time. Like, for example, I would love to read a book, because you both love books too. I would love to read a book while at the same time listening to another audiobook, and that way I could learn twice as much. I don't think that I can develop that ability. That's a fixed mindset. I'm okay with that fixed mindset, because the research shows that the brain can't read two books at the same time. But what happens is that whatever we see as fixed, we think that it tends to be obvious, but a lot of those things are not obvious. And in fact, it's not right. Mm-hmm. And so when we kind of think about what people, are there people who became great at this ability that I tend to see as fixed? And what do they think? Do they think this is something that people can develop? And how do people develop this? Mm-hmm. What strategies do they use? That is a fruitful, fruitful work and reflection to be thinking about.
It's very interesting, because when we started our property management company, there was a lot of things that came up and early on that, property management companies don't do things like this, or it's not done that way, or it's always been done this way. So don't do it. I'll give you a classic example. Yes. We don't do security deposits. We do something called a move-in fee. And we actually learned it. We learned from this old couple that we bought a property from that was using a move-in fee instead of security deposits. We implemented it, and it really transformed our business in so many ways. We don't need to get into how, but it was that willingness to give it a shot versus it's always been done this way. So that's a classic example of how it really applies to our industry as well.
I love that. And Eduardo, you discuss and talk a lot about, and it seems so intuitive, but the learning zone versus the performance zone. Now, a lot of us, when we're entrepreneurs, we want to do, and you're always performing, but you're not getting better. You're not sharpening the saw, as Stephen Covey says. We need to be doing both. Can you describe both of those zones, and which, you know, how do you actually focus in on and implement time on both of those zones?
Yeah. So let me kind of take us out of our context to understand the ideas, and then we'll bring it back to our context in, sure. in multi-property. So multifamily property. So the take, for example, sports, right? We were talking about John McEnroe before. If the match where we're trying to win, it is what we call a performance zone. Because what we're trying to do is do the best thing we do, try to minimize mistakes, and try to win the game. But if that's all we do, if we're only playing matches, we stagnate. We don't actually get better. Sometimes we think the best way to become a great soccer player is to play lots of soccer, but that's actually not true. Like what athletes do in practice is they work on the things that they haven't mastered yet, or the next level of challenge. Mm-hmm. So for example, as an exercise, you might have defensive players play offense and offensive players play defense so that they can put themselves in the shoes of the person they're playing against. That's not something you would do during the match. Just as an example. So there's research, for example, that among like serious chess players, the more time they spend playing games of chess, the worse they are and the lower their ranking. Because the more time that they spend playing games of chess, which is a performance zone activity, the less time that they're spending in the learning zone. Which as an example in chess, it would be taking a chessboard position that happened in a game between grandmasters and thinking about what move would I make, and then think about what move did the grandmaster make and why they make that move instead of mine. And that's a very different thing than trying to just put your best foot forward. There's research that shows that among general physicians, the more years of experience they have on the job, on average, they have lower or lesser outcomes in terms of patient outcomes because they're so busy seeing patients performing, executing, that on average, they don't have a lot of time to read, research, and stay up to date with the new technologies and new practices. And so just getting the job done, trying to minimize mistakes, is not the way to improve. But obviously, we need to do that. We're so busy. We have so much to do. And so the question is, in order to improve, we have to do what the two of you have talked about. Like Jake talked about experimenting with, instead of taking, you know, security deposits, taking a moving fee. That's an experiment that you can run and see, I'm going to try something different from what I've done in the past, see how it works. That's an example of a learning zone activity, something that's designed to get you to get better rather than just to get the task done. Mm-hmm. And so examples of learning zone activities in the workplace might be asking for feedback, right? So the people that you serve, you know, what worked well, what can we improve in? That's information that's useful that we can learn from. If something doesn't go well, rather than brush it and under the rug, just talk about it. Hey, this didn't go well. How could we do things differently in the future? And having that conversation. Obviously reading, which you both love, or like having a coach, like you talked about. Those are all examples of figuring out how can I work differently, and then testing to see what works better than what I'm doing right now.
So what I love about this is, for me, is we created Jake and Gino as an education company because I know anybody can go out there and get the knowledge and try to find deals, but holding them accountable and creating the atmosphere for the growth mindset to say, it's just not the first deal. We have inflection points in our life. When you buy your first few deals, it's all about the I'm a mentality. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. But a successful entrepreneur hits that inflection point and then needs to grow. Then all of a sudden, it's not just them. They need to start hiring people. And then after they start hiring people, they need to start implementing systems. That's why I had one restaurant over 20 years, but within 5 or 6 years, I had 1,500 apartment units. Same person, just a different mindset, and the ability to see that it's just not I, it's just not the dependent me. It becomes the interdependent, as Stephen Covey talks about. It becomes the we. And I think that's part of the growth mindset, but growing as a person. So that's one of the reasons why we created Jake and Gino. And I think the learning zone for me was crucial. It was very hard when you're in a W-2 or you're in a small business and you're trying to work every day, every week. You're trying to make the dollar and you're forgetting about adding new skills. Once I started adding those new skills, it really helped me out with my performance. I was able to perform better and perform newer tasks. And then once I started performing newer tasks, I had more confidence. My growth mindset started to grow. And then I wanted to go more into the learning zone. Although I know a lot of the listeners out there, they may feel a little, what's the word? It's like they may feel a little awkward saying, I just need to make money. I don't have time to learn. How do you get over that mindset? Because for me, especially for someone in sales, they're just out there selling every day. Sales is a skill. It's a learnable skill where you need to sharpen that saw every week and every month to continue to grow. How would you give people an idea of it's okay, we need to spend more time in the learning zone?
So the first thing to think about is that if you want to increase performance over the long term, the way to do that is to find a way to regularly engage in the learning zone. Mm-hmm. So it's not like the learning zone is going to take away from performance. The learning zone is going to increase performance mm-hmm. over the long term, mm-hmm. but not over the very short term. It's like if you're in the last week of the month and you need to meet quota, like the way to maximize sales for this week is to be on the performance zone full force, right? But if the person, that's fine to do sometimes. But realize that if that's all you do all the time, if you're always doing the same thing and not trying mm-hmm. to get better and getting more new information and experimenting, mm-hmm. You're always going to stay at that level of performance, and you're not going to be able to go from one restaurant to 1,500 units or to, you know, to get better, you know, substantially better. So if you want higher performance over the long term, figuring out how to engage in the learning zone. If you are feeling overwhelmed, you have very little time, you have too many tasks to do, then I would recommend finding something that's really quick and easy to do, but that you can do very regularly, like ideally every day. So can you spend 5 minutes a day in the learning zone doing something, right? Whether it's in your commute, whether it's reflecting about how the day went well, what didn't, and what you're going to try differently next time. Whether it is soliciting feedback, a lot of these things don't have to take a lot of time, right? But soliciting feedback from your colleagues, like is there a blog, like, right, or this podcast or any other information that you can get new ideas from on a regular basis. But if you say, okay, I'm going to spend 2 hours a day, I'm spending no time on the learning zone now, and I'm going to spend 2 hours a day. Like often that's just too big a jump. And then we say, I can't do this. I just have too much to do. So I would say start small, but very regularly, so that you build a habit and then it becomes easier to expand that over time. Mm-hmm. So there's time that is devoted to the learning zone, like reading or listening to a podcast. And there's also ways to integrate the learning zone and the performance zone together. so that as you're getting things done, you are trying them in a different way. That's a way to do both things at the same time, for example. Mm-hmm. Or as you're getting something done, you're getting getting information that later you can review and you can learn from. So finding ways to get the work done, but do it in a different way, not in the same way that we've always done.
One interesting thing that I just had to say is that you can structure your day to accommodate for both. I start my day in the learning zone, and then right now we're in the performance zone. But you can also do the same thing with your companies, your organization. And we talk, about our cadence of accountability. Set time aside for the learning zone that's appropriate, not at the end of the quarter if you're doing sales, but I think it's all about structuring and awareness. It's a great point, so Eduardo.
I love that.
Yeah, the calendar is so powerful, right? If you block the time, like that's that, blocking the time however you want to use the time is such a powerful tool. Yeah.
Eduardo, I should have asked this sooner, but I need to ask this question because I know all the people out there with a fixed mindset. How does it affect relationships? Because for me, when I was younger, I had the fixed mindset with my wife. I always had to be right. I needed the affirmation. I needed to be loved all the time. It was always someone else's fault. I want you to peel back the onion of anybody on this call with possibly a fixed mindset in there and let them diagnose it and say, wow, I'm the one at fault. How do I grow in this relationship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a fixed mindset and growth mindset affects all aspects of our lives, mm-hmm. including relationships. And so, for example, can I become a better husband? Am I fixed the way I am as a husband? Is something that then if I believe that I can become a better husband and that's important to me, then I'm going to be thinking about what can I do differently, mm-hmm. right? So that's pretty basic. When we are in a growth mindset, we are interested in getting other people's perspectives and their point of view. So Gino, you tell a story of early in your marriage when you walked into the living room and your wife was 6 months pregnant, sick in the couch, and you were kind of from your perspective, hey, I'm working 70 hours a week. I'm really tired. I need to eat. I'm just gonna get some food and just made the food and ate it. And from her perspective, it was like, oh my God, I'm sick. I'm on the couch and he made food and he just made food for him and not for me, right?
You had, hey, to, bring the, you had to bring that up.
Ruthless.
And so in a growth mindset, right, we might make that mistake. We can make a mistake in any mindset, but in a growth mindset, when we realize that, we say, wow, like, how can I get better at putting myself in my spouse's shoes, mm-hmm. and seeing things from her or his perspective and getting into conversations. Hey, here's where I was coming from. I see where you're coming from. And then, like, how can I continue to get better at making this experience better for both of us? Because if the experience of the marriage is better for the other person, it's also going to be better for me. So it's a we instead of an I, right?
That's great.
And it is a journey that we can work on for sure.
So people see the world as they are, not as it is. So back then, to my credit, I was working hard, but I didn't acknowledge my wife being pregnant and I was selfish. That's how I was. And I had a different perception that the wife stays home, takes care of the kids at whatever cost. And that was my paradigm. That was my map. That was my fixed mindset. But as I grew, it took me a long time. I'm not smart. I needed a lot of work on it, everybody. It takes a lot of work and a lot of effort. You have to want to do that. That's what Eduardo said. And that's what coaching helped me out with. Life coaching was all about figuring out why I was becoming more clear in my life. So if you guys can adopt that and work on yourselves and you want to become better, because we should all want to strive to do better because we all have the ability to get better. My last question before we go to the short answers, Eduardo, is what can leaders do to foster continuous improvement and innovation?
So three things to think about is, one, think about how you frame things for yourself and for the people you lead, meaning what is it that we do at work every day? Is it just to get the tasks done, or are we also working to get better, right? Using ideas like growth mindset, like learning zone and performance zone, in which ways do we want to engage in the learning zone, but in which ways do we want to engage in the performance zone and try to minimize mistakes and put our best foot forward? So framing to make sense of what it is that we do on a daily basis. Second is systems and habits. And you talked about kind of systems and habits. It's how do we want to work both to perform and to learn, and putting those systems and habits in place. Like, Jake talked about putting his mornings in the learning zone, that is a system and habit that he uses. And similarly, we can do similar things as a team. Like when you meet as a team every Monday morning, you have a system of the things that you talk about. And some of those things that you talk about are learning oriented. They're things about where are we, what's working well, how can we get better, you know, what are we going to try differently? And third is model learning. So not just talk about the importance of learning, but actually communicate that through your actions, right? What does that mean? It means soliciting feedback and talking about what I want to improve and asking for other people's support along the way. Asking questions, you know, when we're not sure, saying, I don't know, I'm not sure, or hey, here's what I think, let's try it and see how it works, rather than, you know, I'm sure of myself and I'm the smartest person in the room. Because our actions speak louder than our words. And if people see us as a know-it-all rather than as a work in progress who's continuing to improve, they're going to emulate the behaviors they see. So those are the things I would say: framing, systems and habits, and model learning.
And we've all learned a lot of this, Jake, through our coaching with Scaling Up. We have Net Promoter Scores where we're getting constant feedback from our employees, from our residents. And we also do something that we have our Rockefeller Habits, and we have our Monday morning huddle every week with our executive team. We're getting feedback from all the different branches of our companies, and we're getting communication, but we're also learning what they're doing and learning how to implement. So as you're saying this, I would not have been able to have 30 restaurants without what we're talking about right now. You have to grow into the person you want to become. That's part of hitting a goal. Just because I want another restaurant, if I don't have the ability to implement, whether it's a Net Promoter Score, getting that feedback, or being able to communicate, you're not going to be able to. So I think the growth mindset allows you to learn that and gives you the space to say, how do I figure this out? And it really comes down to educating yourself and investing in your education. That's what Jake and I have done over the past couple of years. And that's what I challenge everyone listening on this call. Don't be afraid to invest in your education. There's a cost to everything in life. You either pay to play or you seek to serve. I've said that often. And it's really an amazing benefit. Once you learn something, I have it forever, and I can continue to build companies because I have the framework built out. But if I didn't invest in myself and Jake didn't invest in himself, we wouldn't be talking about all these things that are really, really important to growing a company.
You are both. I have to say, I have gotten to speak with both of you and learn about your family of businesses, and it is very inspiring, and it is a great manifestation of growth mindset and continuous improvement and innovation. So thank you for being a model and an example, and I've enjoyed learning from both of you.
Thank you.
All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know, this isn't a high-pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now. All right, we are back. I'm going to roll the dice a little bit here, Eduardo. I'm a little nervous to ask this because it goes a little personal into our companies, but we were literally giving a team member feedback last night. Okay. And so this is why it's a little sensitive. I'm not going to use names here. We're giving coaching last night about adopting new, you know, procedures as things change, and hey, we're going to try to do it like this now. And I want to, you put yourself in the role as the manager. The employee's feedback was, you know, maybe I'm not a good fit anymore. How would you handle that?
I would ask why. You know, why do you think that you're not a good fit anymore? Try to get more information from them. It could be that their values have changed or what they're interested in, right? Like, you know, I'm not interested in multifamily anymore. I'm going to want to focus on, you know, taking care of horses or whatever it is. And I think, or it may be something else. It may be that they're not feeling confident and they're failing a lot and not being able to meet the goals. And if that's true, right, if they're failing and not able to actually do the job that's required, then I would have a conversation of, you know, first, is that true? And second, can they get better? Are they so far off that they are way off that it would take too long to actually get to where they can actually do the job that's required? In which case, a different role might be needed, or they might need to kind of switch companies if there was a mistake in terms of match and in terms of the skills that are needed. Or, you know, can they learn this, you know, in a way that they can get to success, whether, you know, whether in partnership with somebody else or on their own. So I think I would need to have a conversation in terms of what do you mean, you know, and explore, you know, can we get to success through improvement and through changing things? How do you handle it? And do you have any reactions to that?
Well, so I wasn't in on the actual conversation, but the thing that scares me there is that it wasn't a huge, you know, or a very challenging, ask, if you will. My fear is more of the unwillingness to attempt to adopt or change, and that's where I'm fearful of, because that shows an unwillingness to grow, and a growth mindset is one of our company's core values. So that's where I'm getting a little bit nervous right now about the situation.
Yeah, so I think, you know, you're communicating that learning and improvement is important to you. You're communicating what behaviors lead to that, right? To try to experiment, to work, to improve, to try new things, to work hard, to not leave any stone unturned. And then if people are not embracing those behaviors, I would say giving feedback and saying, hey, I'm not seeing these behaviors that are really important to us and that are important for success here. And if they're not changing after that, then at some point making the decision, this is not a good fit. It's not working. You know, I don't see the behaviors that are important to us, that are important for all of us to do, and needing to part ways. And that is something to do if the feedback to improve is not being embraced.
Yeah, that's really good. I'm gonna make more of a statement and allow you to offer feedback on my statement right now, because you may or may not have anything on it. But a couple of my favorite books, Principles by Ray Dalio and Killing Sacred Cows by Garrett Gunderson. And as I went through mindset, I just have to believe that Ray Dalio read this book about five times, because so much of what came out of Principles, and I love them both, seems to be operating with the growth mindset. And then we can talk about Killing Sacred Cows in a minute. Do you have any comment on that?
I'm not familiar with Killing Sacred Cows, but Ray Dalio is a wonderful growth mindset leader. Bridgewater Associates, you know, the most important, if we talked about learning strategies and habits and systems, the most important system at Bridgewater Associates is feedback. You know, they, for example, they record all of their meetings, and that recording is available to everybody to listen to learn from. And then they can have very open and honest conversations with each other about what they spoke about in the meeting. So yes, I would agree completely with you. Ray Dalio is an incredible learner and a model of learning.
So the Killing Sacred Cows book, Jake, it talks about, and Eduardo, it talks about the abundance mindset and the scarcity mindset. And it talks about reaching your sole purpose. A person with a fixed mindset doesn't want to strive for their sole purpose. They want to strive for comfort. A person with a growth mindset is always thinking abundantly. That's why, once again, we created the Jake and Gino community. We want to think abundantly. We want to share our knowledge and our expertise. We want to have the seek to serve mentality. That's what I think the growth mindset embodies. And in Garrett's book, he talks about abundance versus scarcity. And when I read that book back in 2008, it didn't have that big an effect on me. But as I continue my journey along, I'm like, wow, I want to always think about abundance. I always want to think about adding value. I always want to think about growing. And I always want to think about what my purpose here on earth is and try to achieve it. And I know I'm in this space right now. I'm really enjoying this, and I'm becoming a better learner and a better person doing this and a better performer. And it works hand in hand. And if you're trying to achieve your sole purpose and you love what you're doing, because we're always taught with a fixed mindset, oh, you know, work is hard. You're not supposed to enjoy work, but that's such the fixed mindset. It's not the growth mindset.
Yeah, I thank you for that explanation, Gino. I haven't read Killing Sacred Cows. I would comment a couple of things about abundance. One is that a lot of these ideas, we interpret it in different ways, mm-hmm. and we have to build our own mental coherence. So, for mm-hmm. example, the word learning is something that a lot of people have a negative association with. Because when I was at school, learning like was not boring. It was mm-hmm. it was not something I wanted to be doing. Right? Mm-hmm. I loved to learn and to ask questions and to explore and to tinker before school. Mm-hmm. And when they sat me in a chair there for the whole year, and teachers were coming in and lecturing to me about things that weren't relevant to me and I didn't care about, I learned that learning sucks, that learning is not fun, mm-hmm. and that I didn't want to learn. And so when we use a word like learning, some people might see it as a positive thing, like the three of us, and other people might still say, like, learning, I don't want that, right? And so the same thing with abundance, like abundance might mean different things to different people. Like for you, in your mental coherence is working really well for you. You're in a really good place. And seeing abundance is something that is, you're expanding the size of the pie, is helping you live in the present moment in a positive way and serve other people. For me, I had a bit of a conflict with abundance, because I was seeing abundance as grow, and then once we become really big, then I can be happy then, right? Mm-hmm. It's like sell more widgets, get more revenue, and until I get to that goal of being, you know, a large company, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be happy. And that was problematic for me rather than enjoying the process. Mm-hmm. And something that has helped me when I read the book, The Art of Happiness by the Dalai Lama, because I was like, I was getting paid really well. I had an incredible job and I was still unhappy. And what I learned from that book is that my emotions and my happiness comes from within. I can have a great salary and be unhappy, or not a great salary and be happy and enjoy the process and enjoy the process of growth. So what I learned from that book, Brené Brown, I think puts really well in a sentence that works for me. She says, the opposite of scarcity is not abundance, it's enough. And that resonated with me because in a particular understanding of abundance, it is, as long as we want more, we feel scarce, because mm-hmm. we are not going to be happy until we have more.
Yes.
Versus saying, yeah, I'm going to continue growing myself and the process and serving people better, but what I have right now and the way I am right now, it's enough. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, when I was in venture capital, I remember being in we were going to go see a company that we were working with that was in our portfolio companies. And I was traveling with two very senior venture capitalists from two different firms. And we were in one of their private jets. And this person was telling me, hey, they were both very good friends. So he was telling me about his jet and he was telling me, I'm trying to convince him, my friend, that and my colleague, to get to upgrade his jet to one like this, because this one's better than the one he has. And my boss said, the private jet I have is fine. I'm not going to upgrade my jet. And I realized at that moment that that's when one becomes happy, when you say
yes,
it's enough. Because otherwise, like, you'll if you just want the bigger car and the bigger house and the more luxurious thing, and you're not enjoying the present, right? Mm-hmm. And saying the present is enough, it doesn't mean that I can't grow and continue to do things, but am I enjoying the present moment? Is this mm-hmm. enough? Is something that is, I think, something to think about.
Love that.
So it appears to me that you're going to have a hard time achieving a growth mindset without self-awareness. So can you I think this will help folks more than maybe anything on the show today. Can you identify common traits or examples, and even real life examples of people with the fixed mindset and what that looks like specifically?
Yeah, I think when we receive information of a mistake we made or something we could have done better, and it stings us, right? And we're saying, we react defensively. We say, I don't want to hear this, or that's something to notice and think about. is this preventing me from getting better, from really listening? And is it based on a fixed mindset? Mm-hmm. Is it based on the presumption that people are fixed the way they are? And if people are telling me information I can learn from, it's really sounding to me as meaning that I am incapable, right? That my abilities are fixed at a low level. So what are the emotions that I'm feeling when I am not doing things flawlessly? And then when you notice those emotions, you know, are they, think about the underlying ability, and do you see that ability as something that you can improve and something that you have strategies to improve at those things? I think that's a way to increase self-awareness.
I never do things flawlessly, so I'm pretty good with that. I struggle with everything, so it's easy for me.
Well, in a growth mindset, perfection doesn't exist, right? Because if the Olympic gold medalist can continue to get better, mm-hmm. it means that perfection is never attainable if we can always get better. So mm-hmm. there's nothing that's flawless. We can always continue to get better. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
Eduardo, what is your best habit for success?
My best habit for success, I have this term that I call STEM habits. And STEM habits are habits that enable us to continue to change and improve ourselves. So for me, that is my morning habit. The first thing that I do every morning after I wake up, those are the most important things because, and I'll tell you like specifically what the one small habit is for me is before I let the outside world in, like before I check my email, before I check the news, before I check social media, I do a series of things and it ends on reading reminders to myself. Those include what are my strategic priorities, what are the most important things that I want to be working on, and then identifying what are my top three goals for today, what are the things that I want to accomplish today. So that allows me to live life proactively rather than reactively. And part of what I read is what am I working to improve in myself? What is the new habit that I'm working to change? And so that means that every morning I do the same thing, which is really, really easy and automatic to me. And that includes reminding myself on what I want to change on myself. And so that makes it really easy for me to always continue to change and work at something that I'm trying to build on myself.
Very nice. We talked, went through a bunch of books. Any other book recommendations that have made a positive impact in your life that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Yeah, so definitely Mindset by Carol Dweck is a seminal book on growth mindset. Peak by Anders Ericsson is the seminal book on deliberate practice. And deliberate practice is an example of a learning zone activity. And it is what the top experts in certain domains do. So that's a great book for sure. Principles by Ray Dalio, which the two of you talked about, those are all great books.
What project are you excited about right now?
Right now, I'm working on a book. I'm really excited about it. I've interviewed both of you for that book, and I'm excited by what I learned from both of you. But the book is about the learning zone and the performance zone, and how you can get better at both of those things and at doing them together. And it will come out next year. So that is my highest priority right now. I'm interviewing a lot of people that I'm learning from, and it's my first book, so it's definitely a learning zone for me, but also a performance zone because I want to create something that's going to be helpful to lots of people.
All right. So how do we get the pre-order?
Thank you. Not yet, but when it's ready, I will let you know.
Sounds good. And if folks want to, learn more about this and check out your website, where can folks go to learn more?
Yeah, my website is wiringgrowth.com. And that's a place to find me. I'm also on LinkedIn and Twitter.
Gino, favorite podcast of 2021 so far, but before we go, wrap us up, big guy.
So Jake and Eduardo, picture this. You have a young Eduardo in a lush, beautiful, tropical climate of Venezuela. He gets uprooted and goes to nowhere less than Tulsa, Oklahoma. A little bit different than Venezuela, right? A little bit colder, right? Goes to college, becomes an engineer. Then from engineering, jumps into investment banking, where he lives a comfortable life. He makes a ton of money. But there comes some point where I think the fixed mindset takes over, and he's at his midlife crisis, and he says, I need number five and number six. I need growth and I need contribution in my life, because I wasn't here just to make money and just to tell CEOs who are smarter than me and repeat what they're saying back to me. I'm not adding value to their lives. So I go back to college and I meet the fortuitous meeting of Carol Dweck, and that meeting from spawning the book of mindset and being able to start a business and have her do research and learning the fixed mindset and the growth mindset, and then being able to be on a couple of TED Talks to spread the knowledge and the wisdom of that and to empower others to say to themselves, really, where are you living? Are you living in a fixed mindset or are you living in a growth mindset? Where can we get better in our lives? I think that's an amazing testament of Eduardo's journey. And, you know, sprinkle in a little bit of happiness, a little bit of the Dalai Lama, a little bit of, you know, the goals are great, but it's more important about the journey of getting there, right? It's the person you become to get the goal that's more important than the goal itself. I think that's it's a great testament.
All right, Eduardo, final thought.
Thank you both. I'm so glad we've connected and you're an inspiration. So thanks for showing the way of what it takes to grow and make the world a better place and kill it in terms of results as well. So thank you for your great work and keep rocking it.
Thanks everybody.
Thanks guys.
Take care, Eduardo.